All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, preseason week two edition here on the show. Thank you for joining us today. I've got a lot to get to on this podcast, and actually I've got really two main things today that I want to get to. The first one is the obvious one. If you follow the Bucks in the media, if you read Joe Bucks Fan, or if you read anything on Twitter, or pretty much anywhere this week, you've seen the comparisons because they're meeting on the field for the first time since literally the first game for both of them back in 2015. It's Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. And I'll tell you what, you know, we've done a lot of talking about Jameis Winston on this show. Every Bucks podcast has. Back before the draft happened in 2015, there was plenty of other stuff about comparisons and things like that. And now, you know, 3 years later, as they enter their fourth season, there's certainly those same comparisons being made. They'll always be made. But I want to talk today from our perspective as Bucks fans, and I know this is a very polarizing issue, but I've been thinking, like, really, truly hard this week, not just throwing it out there just for chatter. Like, I've actually been pondering this. You know, what would I do right now if I got to do it over again and I was in charge and I could stay with Jameis or have Mariota? Which one would I go with? And I gave that a lot of thought this week and did reading and all the things and looked at stats and numbers. And, you know, we'll talk about that today. The other thing I want to talk about today is Tony Dungy being inducted into the Ring of Honor, which is absolutely deserved. And, you know, I still think back to the way this franchise was before he came and the way this franchise has been since he came. And I know the Bucks have fallen into, you know, old habits, if you want to call it that. The past 10 years have been a lot like the 20 years before Dungy. But I'll tell you what, it's still different now than it was before Dungy. And the day he came to town was kind of the day it all changed. So we'll talk about that today. I got a lot of good memories from that 1996 season, of course, the 1997 season, and stuff like that. Of course, I love hearing from you guys. If you want to email me, you can always do so. The email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y @yahoo.com. And you can also get me on Twitter @bobbygameday. A couple quick housekeeping notes before we get right into it. The fridge schedules are done. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I've been kind of hyping this up a little bit as something I'm willing to do for you guys because I already do it for myself and it doesn't cost me anything extra to give it to you. I make a big refrigerator schedule every year for my favorite football teams. It's like a little football season beginning tradition. And I get on Microsoft Word. You know, I don't just take the schedule out of the newspaper and clip it out. I get on Microsoft Word. I punch up the schedule. I put the logos for all the teams we play. I put big Bucks logos on there. I just make it look nice, you know, and it's just an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And I do one for the Bucks and I do one for the Gators. So I said to myself over the summer, I was like, you know what? No reason the people shouldn't be able to have these too. It's as simple as emailing you a Microsoft Word file. You can print it out yourself on a color printer or black and white or whatever you want. So that's what I'm going to do. So like I said, email me if you want one, and I'll send it to you. It's no skin off my back. It's very easy to do, and I'll do it as soon as I'm ready to do it. I've actually typed up the schedule, did that yesterday, and it wasn't done before. So I've got a lot of people who have already emailed who are waiting. For those of you out there, if you're one of those, I am sending it out later today. And I also have the Gators, if you want the Gators. Now, if you want some other team, I haven't decided if I'm going to start taking requests, but I have the Bucks and the Gators. You can have both, or you can certainly have the Bucks one, which I think most of the people listening to this show would probably want if you're a fridge schedule type of person. So with that in mind, let's get to what we got to get to today, because, like I said, this whole Mariota-Winston thing, it's still, you know, if you go just on the stats, and again, think to yourself right now, and this may be something that takes you about a millisecond to decide, or it may be something like me that you have to really ponder. If I said right now, hey, you can have a mulligan if you want, right now, Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota, knowing what we know right now, which would you do? And I have to say, man, like, when the whole thing happened in 2015, and really going back to the end of the 2014 season, I don't know how many of you guys remember this, but I remember sitting very vividly in the club section at Raymond James Stadium because the Bucks were terrible, and I think I got a club seat outside for like literally $10 before the game. So it's the final game of the season, and it's the Bucks and the Saints, 2014. And I remember sitting there with my friend Bob Haught, if he's listening. We went to the game together. And knowing going into that game that if the Bucks lost, they were going to have the number one pick. And that if they won the game, as long as Tennessee still lost, the Bucks would drop to number two. If they both lost, the Bucks would stay at number one. And so I remember sitting there that day, like, and I knew, sometimes something that has just lasting implications that are decades long can be happening right in front of your eyes and you don't realize it at the time. But we all knew full well, like I remember going to the game that day thinking like the fate of the Bucks franchise, and we don't know if it's going to be good or bad, but one way or the other is going to be determined by this just god-awful meaningless football game that's about to take place here at Raymond James Stadium. But I went anyway because it was the last game of the year and I wanted to see the Bucks one more time. So the Bucks led that game in the second half, if you remember. They were actually on their way to winning against a heavily favored Saints team, blowing the number one pick and getting the number two, and what I thought at the time would be settling for Marcus Mariota. And lo and behold, and a lot of you might remember the game, the Bucks didn't tank in the sense that they intentionally dropped passes or intentionally let guys block them or run around them. The players on the field were trying very hard, but the Bucks did tank in the personnel they put out on the field because they had, I mean, they weren't even trying as far as personnel went. And in that second half, the Bucks, I think they were leading like 14-3, or I don't remember the exact score, but they were up by two scores with like 7 minutes left. And the Saints had to score two touchdowns to win, and they did. And again, I didn't know whether to be hacked, because I'm not one of those people that roots against my team for better draft picks. I don't do that. But it was a very confusing, very weird feeling that day, just sitting there, all of this playing out in front of me, not even knowing what it would all mean. And the Titans up on the out-of-town scoreboard at Raymond James, you could see they were going to lose. So there was no question. If the Bucks won the game, they were going to drop to the number two pick. And if they lost, they'd stay number one. And I remember that game-winning touchdown pass by Drew Brees. I forget who he threw it to. But I sat there and I was like, well, Jameis Winston's already... Because I knew they'd pick Jameis Winston number one. If the Titans had been number one, they probably would have too, but we don't know for sure. And they wanted their GM, or not their GM, because their GM was with the Bucks at the time, but one of their pro personnel guys or somebody was on the radio in Nashville this week, and he said, oh yeah, that was a no-brainer. We wanted Mariota all along, and we're glad it worked out. And of course he's going to say that. He's not going to say, oh yeah, if we'd been number one, we would have taken Winston. But I don't know what would have happened if the Bucks win that game, but it could very likely have turned history on its ear. Nevertheless, the Bucks didn't come up with the win. And here we are, 3 years later, and obviously a lot has happened. Although on the field, just on the field, they really haven't separated themselves that much. I don't think either one is the obvious, oh yeah, this guy's the one for sure, type of person. Now you might say, well, Bobby, you just answered your own question. They're not that far apart on the field. And yet one has zero issues and never would have issues, and you never even have to think about him when you put your head on your pillow at night wondering what news is going to break, if he's going to do something. And the other one has us in a mess that's got him suspended for the first three games of the season. So what, you know, maybe that's what some of you say, and maybe you think, oh, I'd much rather have Mariota. And listen, I am not a Jameis Winston homer by any means. I mean, I'm a Gator. I'm predisposed to dislike Jameis Winston. Obviously, all the off-field stuff he had in college, combined that he was a Florida State guy, he's exactly the type of guy me and my buddies would just rip to shreds. Like, can you believe this guy? Screw him. I don't want him quarterbacking my team. And yet, I never was like that. I wanted Winston all along. Even going back to before he was an option for the Bucks, even going back to before he had played college football, or had only been playing it for about an hour, when on that Labor Day night, I guess, what was it, 2012 or something? I don't even remember what year it was, but it was a couple years before the draft, when Jameis Winston made his debut as a starter for the Seminoles, and it was a Labor Day night game. It was in Pittsburgh. It was FSU versus Pittsburgh, and he came out there, and again, freshman. He redshirted, but he was, you know, redshirt freshman, and I remember watching that game at my old house, distinctly thinking, man, you know, I don't want the Bucks. At that point, we're hoping the Bucks were going to be good, but I was thinking, I wonder if the Bucks just end up tanking the next couple, not tanking on purpose, but just end up being very bad the next couple years. And I wonder if the stars could ever line up where we could get this guy. Like, I even thought that the first night I saw Jameis Winston play. And that was before he had any baggage or anything like that. And I guess that's the reason, because whatever your formative opinions are of somebody, whatever the first thing you think is, you tend to stick with that. And you want that to be the truth. You want that to be right. I guess if I had known about Jameis Winston's off-field stuff before I ever saw that game that night, then I would have already had him on my bad list. But I fell in love with him as a QB that night. And from then on, I guess I was more forgiving of all the crap that kept coming out over and over and over again, from the very serious to the not as serious to the downright comical. But with all that said, I mean, that's my point. I was a Winston guy all the way through. So even with the off-field stuff in college, and you know, I had to really do some soul searching there. I've told the story on this podcast before of my buddy Drew, who, and not because, you know, he's a Gator too, but not because of that, but because of his off-field stuff, said, "Bob, I can't do it. Like, if the Bucks draft Jameis Winston, I'm out. I can't support that." If I was the Glazers, I would tell my scouting department and my general manager that you can't draft him, and Bucks aren't going to do that, so I can't support it. And he is stuck with it. I mean, he'll be back the day Jameis Winston is gone, but he's not a Bucks fan right now. And it hurts me, because I love watching games with him, and we had season tickets together, and even texting him during games when I wasn't with him. You know, all those things haven't happened the past few years. And yet I keep hanging on, when it probably would be a little bit easier all this time to have had Mariota and probably had similar results. Although you never can tell for sure if they were on different teams if the results would be the same as they were. But the overall point I'm saying is, even knowing all that, if you gave me the choice right now, and I really thought long and hard, as Ric Flair used to say, think long and hard before you walk that line, I think I'd take Jameis again. I feel like Jameis is, and you know, maybe this is bias, because I'm a Bucks fan. I'm somebody who obviously does a podcast on JoeBucksFan.com, so I cover this team, I watch this team. And maybe Mariota fans feel the same way about their guy. I feel like with Mariota, we know what he is. Like, we've seen it. That's it. That's what he's going to get. What you see is what you get. And he's good. I mean, he's not bad, but I feel like that's it. Whereas Winston, I feel like, oh, no, he's just scratching the surface. He's still improving. You know, I'm sure Titans people are like, oh, well, Winston, we know he's what he is, but Mariota's only going to get better and better. You always think the future is better than the present. That's human nature for everybody. So you think, okay, hey, it's going to improve. This is going to be even better. Imagine how good Jameis will be in 2 years. You know, we all I think that. Whereas Mariota, I'm like, oh, well, we've had a big enough sample size. And at this point, I think it's pretty safe to say he is what he is. They have the same sample size. They're this, you know, same year and everything. So why do I think that about Jameis and not Mariota? There are things that I think I can back it up with. One of those things, and if you look at the teams, because quarterbacks get judged so individually, it's not always the right thing to do. I mean, football is, while the quarterback is obviously the marquee guy and it all starts and ends with him and all that stuff, there's 11 guys on the field and there's 53 guys on a roster, and there's a lot that goes into this, as you all know. I think more so than any other sport. Even though the quarterback is considered the premier position in all of sports, I also think, you know, he's more reliant on the people around him than premier positions in other sports. You know, maybe basketball is similar because you can have a couple good players and go a long way. But my point is, you know, Winston's had some decent weapons. He's had Mike Evans, and he's had some decent receivers. Hasn't had much of a running game. But it doesn't get talked about enough, in my opinion, especially last year, just how bad the offensive line in front of Jameis Winston has been. And they say a quarterback's best friend is a running game, or you might hear, oh, a quarterback's best friend is a good defense that gets turnovers and puts them in field position, or a quarterback's best friend is this, you know, some freaking pass pro is a quarterback's best friend when he's trying to throw a pass. And Jameis Winston, again, last year, and we talked about it on this show, and we've talked about it on other shows, but last year it was literally like jailbreak stuff. Like, I remember him dropping back, and before the back foot got planted, already people in his face, already him having to perform evasive maneuvers. you know, we talk about the turnovers, and I remember there was one in Green Bay, and you know, a few other just terrible fumbles. That, oh God, Jameis doesn't take care of the ball. He's so loosey-goosey with it, which obviously, ultimately, it is the quarterback's responsibility to take care of the ball. But again, just under constant attack by rushers to the point where, and I said this last year, I don't feel like you can accurately evaluate Jameis Winston as a quarterback yet just based on how bad his offensive line play was last year. And so one of the things I'm looking forward to this year, or at least hoping for this year, is to get a better idea of what he can do with him not running for his life all the time. And, you know, the lack of a running game, which maybe does go hand-in-hand with that offensive line performance. Yeah, listen, I'm not saying with Mariota his team is perfect. I mean, there's deficiencies on every roster, and the Titans, like I said, they haven't had a ton of playmakers on the tips outside from Mariota, but he certainly had a better chance to actually throw a damn ball. So, if you look at their career stats through 3 years, and Winston's got, I believe, three more games. But Winston's got a couple thousand more yards. He's got more TDs, on and on and on. Obviously, Mariota has a playoff appearance and an incredible comeback win last year in Kansas City in a game that should have been over before the Titans went to New England and got beat. But even as he led that team to a playoff appearance and a playoff win subsequently, he did it with more interceptions than touchdowns. He had 15 picks last year, just 13 touchdowns. Another one that I took into account when I look at these two guys, and I like Mariota. I have nothing against Mariota. Durability. And I know Jameis had his shoulder issue, but I'm not even talking about their durability as human beings. I'm talking about their styles. I mean, you look at Mariota, the way he runs, and it's an asset for him, but you get hurt more often when you do that. And that has happened already with him, and I believe it'll continue to happen. So if you just look at strictly from a football standpoint, I'm not naive enough to think that this is how it is, but if you look at it strictly from a football standpoint, I wouldn't hesitate. If I had it to do all over again, I'd still take Jameis Winston. Again, strictly in football terms. Now, it's not all strictly in football terms. If you look at the whole big picture, considering the off-field stuff and things like that, I'd think a little harder about it, but I would still take Jameis Winston. But I certainly wouldn't fault anybody who wouldn't, including my buddy Drew or any of you out there, and I still get the tweets and the emails all the time. You know, even when I retweeted something the other day that, you know, someone had broken down their stats, and it's just stats, I know that's not everything, but someone had put a side-by-side of their career numbers, and they're nearly identical, but again, Mariota's a little bit better in some, and then Winston's a little bit better in some other spots. But the point was, right when I retweeted that, oh, Bobby, I don't want to hear it. Stats are for losers, and who won a playoff game, Winston or Mariota? That's what I thought. I get all that, okay? I do, but again, you have to look at the big picture and all the other things that are going with that. And like I said, the Bucs offensive line last year, if that had been Mariota behind there, I don't think he would have done very much either. And I don't think his team would have done very much either. So this is a week where, again, I mean, neither guy's going to play a ton in the preseason game, although they'll both play on Saturday. And the Bucs have been up in Nashville. You probably know this if you've been reading JoeBucsFan.com, but the Bucs have been having joint practices with the Titans this week. And those are always something that, I remember the Bucs did it with the Jags last year, and you know the Bucs looked dominant one day, but oh no, the Jags kicked their ass today, and you read too much into it, and it doesn't mean anything. Bucs have had some success in some drills, and the Titans have had some success in others. You can go on JoeBucsFan.com, as always, and get comprehensive coverage, because they are there. That's the best part about Joe Bucs Fan. They don't mess around. They don't just write from mom's basement. These are adults. These are men. And these guys are there. They're training camp. They're on the road. When the Bucs are on the road, they travel. And they'll give you the first-hand down low and everything going on. And it's been a big week, obviously, on the site. And it's going to continue to be a big week and a big season, hopefully, there as well. But knowing what I know now, 2015 versus 2018, I'd stick with it. Now, Joe Rex wrote, he's a writer for the Nashville, Tennessee, and he wrote an article this week about the same thing. A lot of people have been writing about this topic this week. And he actually did an informal poll of the media people there at practice with both Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota there. And he just kind of walked around. You can look up, if you just Google Joe Rex wrote Winston Mariota, it'll come up. He wrote the article a day ago, I think. And he says he walked around talking to members of the media, just asking them what they think the split among league GMs would have been in 2015 between Jameson and Mariota, and then now. So, according, and this is just his poll with media guys and what they think league GMs would have said. He didn't poll actual league GMs. But in 2015, again, he asked the question today, but he said, hey, what do you think NFL GMs would have come down on this whole thing in 2015 versus now? Most people think they would have preferred Jameis, roughly 20 GMs to 12 in 2015, including the Bucks, who we know preferred Jameis because they actually took him with the first pick. Now, when he asked media members what they thought people around the league would say, he believes, and they believe, that Mariota would be favored by three-quarters of the league, 24-8, if the draft was today. And that may be true. And, you know, he didn't frame it as football terms only, or obviously this is taking into account all the things that have happened. But I still believe, I still firmly believe, that the Bucks have the better guy. I believe Jameis will serve his suspension for 3 games and then come back in game 4. And I believe what happens in those 13 games afterward will be everything in determining Jameis's future going forward, and I believe he will play well. But I don't know any of those things. That's just what I believe. And so many things can change, and I don't know, you know, will the offensive line be better enough? I think they're going to be better only because they were so bad last year, but that doesn't mean they'll be good. They just might be less terrible. You know, how will the defense factor into all that? I mean, you know, all the things you think you know this time of year, you don't know anything. We didn't know anything. Last year, I thought things were going to be just freaking awesome, and it was a terrible season. And I hope that doesn't happen again, but it could. You know, I saw another article. I was just perusing articles just about Winston versus Mariota. And another guy, this kind of pissed me off a little bit. I might tweet about it later. He was breaking down the whole thing about, you know, Mariota and Winston. He was referring to Winston saying, okay, well, a lot of pressure, the bulk of the pressure is on Winston this year because he's very likely going to be 0-3 when he makes his first start against so-and-so. And I was like, whoa, whoa, back up, back up. If you want to say he could very possibly be 0-3, that's fine. That's a fair thing to say. You're going to say they're very likely going to be, like, would you bet on that right now? Like, if I gave you odds, and very likely means very likely a heavy favorite. So if I gave you even money odds, you don't have to take, you know, bad numbers. I bet you $1,000 that they'll either win a game or not. So if they're 0-3, you win the bet. And if they're 1-2 or better, I win the bet. And it's straight up, no odds, $1,000. Would you bet on them being 0-3? Because I sure as hell would not. But when you say very likely, that means, in theory, you would take that bet in a heartbeat. You'd always bet on something that's very likely if you don't have to take odds on it, right? You give me a 50-50 shot on something very likely, I'm taking it. So I didn't like his wording. Don't say, oh, the Bucks will very likely be 0-3. How in the hell could you possibly know that? Nobody knows that. Nobody knows how good the Saints will be this year. Nobody knows how good the Eagles will be this year. Nobody knows how good the Steelers will be this year. When will we learn? Like, when will people learn you don't know things? Like, stop thinking you know things. If we knew things, none of us would be doing what we're doing. We would all be on Bovada or on Five Dimes or whatever, just raking in cash all the time. It'd be very easy if you knew things, but we don't know things. Some of us are on Bovada or Five Dimes anyway, despite not knowing things. But you get my point, right? I mean, everybody acts so certain. Go bet the money line in all those three games, smart guy. See how much money you make. I'm not saying the guy's name because I don't remember it. I read it a little while ago and I don't have a printout in front of me. But it's not important. The Bucks will very likely be 0-3. That's an awful certain thing to say for something that you have no freaking idea will be true or not. But anyway, my point is, you know, I do think Winston will be good this year. And I do think, for those that haven't already just checked out on him permanently and don't want to hear it, and in some cases, I bet you there's a lot of Bucks fans that may be either consciously or subconsciously rooting against him just because they want the whole thing to be over and they want the Bucks to move on. I don't think those people are going to be rewarded. I think Jameis Winston can still be the quarterback here for a long time. I think he can lead them to playoff appearances, and I think he can lead them to playing in games that are going to give them a chance to play in even bigger games. I'll leave it at that, you know. But I do. I think this three-game suspension will come and go. I think it'll be old news by week six, and we'll see what happens. I mean, as far as the fate of the team, nobody knows. But it's an interesting thing to think about this week as the two of them get together. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is my email address. Email me if you want to. It's all spelled normally, all like you'd think. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com if you want to, you know, cite your opinion. Discussion, all that stuff. I love hearing from you on Twitter. I'm at Bobby Game Day. The other thing I wanted to get to on today's show has to do with Tony Dungy going into the Ring of Honor. And I'll tell you what. You know, looking back again, all those years ago, Tony Dungy arriving in Tampa coincided with me entering that age. You know, I was born in 1980. At the beginning of the 1996 football season, I was entering my junior year in high school. And I was kind of one of those kids. And, you know, I look back now, kind of dorky. But I was one of those kids that's just, you know, uber Bucks fan. Like, was totally, like it was too important to me at that point. Like, me and, again, the guy Drew I was talking about a little while ago, my buddy. We were nuts about the Bucks. And had been, I mean, my whole life, you know, going back to the 80s and 90s. And the Bucks had always been so bad, and on and on and on. I've told that story before on the show. But when we got Tony Dungy, I remember the 1996 season very clearly. And you know, you wouldn't have known it at the time how much things were changing yet, because the Bucks started out 0-5. But if you remember that season, they started out 0-5. Dungy got his first win against the Minnesota Vikings, the team he had come from as the defensive coordinator, to go 1-5. Then they started out 1-8, lost three more after that. But after that, they actually ended up finishing pretty strong. I remember a big win out in San Diego. And they finished the season on a positive note. And I usually don't put any credence in, oh, we finished last season strong, it's going to carry over to this year. I mean, too much changes, too much time elapses. But I really do think in that specific instance, that the way the Bucks finished 1996, I remember the offseason between 96 and 97. And you know how every offseason back then, if you've been around for a while here, you remember, we'd always think, oh, maybe the Bucks will finally break through this. You know, they had 20 years of just being garbage, or, all, you know, 15 years. I think it was 15 straight years of double-digit losing seasons, which is just mind-boggling, by the way. I mean, the Browns are pulling it off now almost, but you know, that offseason, I remember thinking, no. I know we say it every year, but this year I totally believe the Bucks are finally going to be good. Then, of course, 1997, which still to this day and probably always will be up there with 2002 as the most fun sports football seasons of my life. The 2006 Gators, the 1997 Bucks, and the 2002 Bucks, for obvious reasons. Those are my three favorite football seasons of all time. And 1997 only ended with a wild card win and then a loss in the divisional playoff, which now would be good, but not like earth moving. But back then, I mean, it's one of the seminal moments of my sports fan life, because I did not even know what anything else was like except watching the Bucks lose until I was a senior in high school. Which I'm glad about, by the way, because it taught me loyalty, and I think I'm a better person for having gone through that. I'm certainly a better Bucks fan. But man, 1997, 5-0 start, you know, final game or final season at the old Sombrero, which has a, you know, more special place in my heart than any stadium there's ever been. I'll always love that. That place is my childhood. Like, that place is like, you know, real greaseball old country stuff for me. And so that 97 season had it all. And then the final game at the Sombrero, which was the playoff win against the Lions, and then going to Green Bay and falling short against Brett Favre and the Packers, who would go on to lose the Super Bowl to the Broncos that year. But 1996 is when it started changing. And I even remember, you know, like I said, the Bucks started out 0-5, beat Minnesota, and then they were 1-8, lost three more in a row, coming into a game against the Oakland Raiders at Tampa Stadium. And I went to the game with my buddy Drew. And this is one of those things I look back on now, and I almost wish I was this pure again. Because you may remember the game, but probably most of you don't. The Bucks were tied with the Raiders. I think it was 17-17. I'm doing this all off of memory. I didn't look this up. And the Raiders were driving the ball down as time ran out. And they actually got like inside the 10-yard line with like a minute left. And they actually got then inside the 5-yard line, almost like on the goal line. But they just took a knee to run the clock down to like 5 seconds left just so they could kick like a 28-yard field goal. I mean, literally, I think it was literally either an extra point distance, or it might have even been a little closer than an extra point. Like, they were on the goal line, and they just didn't run another play because they wanted to just kick the field goal and get out of there with a 20-17 win. So, this guy named Cole Ford was their kicker, comes out, and I remember I was sitting, like, perfectly in line with the goalpost at the old Sombrero, and he missed a 28-yarder. He hooked it left. And I remember looking, because, I was parallel with the goalpost, so all I could see was the ball. I couldn't see if the ball went through or not. And I just remember watching the referee run out and wave his arms. And me and my buddy Drew, again, we're 16-year-old idiots at this point in our lives. I mean, just jumped into the arms of these strangers that were sitting next to us, these guys who are like 10 years old, probably, you know, they're probably in their 40s now. I'm in my 30s. But I remember distinctly, like, jumping into their arms, hugging them, then sprinting up the steps because we were sitting on the aisle and just high-fiving everybody up and down the steps. I mean, we were beside ourselves. And this is a 1-8. So it's not like this game matters. Like, if the Bucks win this game, they're going to the playoffs. This game made the Bucks 2-8. But we were so happy when he missed that kick. Cole Ford, by the way, went on to fire shots at Siegfried and Roy's house out of a white van in Las Vegas. And he's been institutionalized since then. I don't know if that kick had anything to do with it or not, but that's a true story. But anyway, the Bucks ended up going to overtime with the Raiders, and they were able to get the win. Michael Husted hit a field goal. Remember Michael Husted? And the Bucks won 20-17. Again, it moved their record to 2-8. If that same thing happened today, this is why I miss kind of in a lot of ways being as pure as I was, because you get older, you get jaded. If that same thing happened today, I'd be watching the game. I'd probably be chuckling to myself like, oh, God, can you believe how bad both these teams are? Nobody wants to win this game. What a farce this is. We suck. Hey, great, now we're 2-8 instead of 1-9. You know, I'd be such a jaded just dickhead now about it. But back then, I was just so happy the Bucks won. Like, nothing else mattered. It didn't matter what their record was, being 2-8. It didn't matter about anything else. I didn't have to be too cool for school. Like, I was better than all this. I was just pure, unadulterated joy as a 16-year-old watching the Bucks win that game. And I miss that. I really do miss that. And now that I have a son of my own, that's one of the best parts. For those of you who have kids, you might understand this. Is going back. It's almost like going back in time and seeing everything through a kid's eyes again. Because now he's six. He's not jaded. He doesn't have all the baggage I have. And I watch Bucks games with him now. In fact, I'm really looking forward to this season because he's got as good of an understanding as he's ever had. And he can really understand football, or at least a basic understanding of football now. And we're going to have a lot of fun this year going to games and watching games on TV and stuff. But I would love to be able to go back in time and go to one more game at the Sombrero as a 16-year-old because, man, that really was a lot of fun. And being that happy over something really so dumb at the time, it makes me feel good. But that was Tony Dungy, and that was when it was, the mentality was changing. And I think even back then at 16 years old, my buddy Drew and I could sense that. And the Bucks went on to finish that year. I think it was, they went from 2-8. I think they finished 6-10. Like, they won like 5 out of their last 7 or something. And the idea of the Bucks winning 5 out of 7 at all, even in a season where the overall record was bad, was like a big deal. It was like 5-2 with Sam Weish back in 95. It was like, whoa, 5-2? Like, are you kidding me? You know, we couldn't believe that could even be possible. But it started to turn. And then the Bucks, as we all know now, they became a legitimate franchise when that man, Tony Dungy, took over. And then they had a series of near misses. And they became a perennial playoff team. But we all remember they couldn't beat the Eagles twice on the road. The offense just never could get going. Mike Shula, Les Steckel, all those names. Again, if you're an old school Bucks fan, you remember all this stuff. And the reason Tony Dungy ultimately didn't work out here is because of that offense. They could never, as good as that defense was, they could never get that offense going. And he was eventually fired, and the Bucks brought in John Gruden, who won the Super Bowl in his first year. Now, if you ask Bucks fans today who's a more popular coach or who they look back on more fondly, I think it's overwhelmingly, not that they don't like Gruden, some of them might not, but it's overwhelmingly Dungy who's the more popular guy now, right? I mean, that's not even in dispute. If I did a poll of Bucks fans, or if Joe put up a poll on the website or something like that, it'd be Dungy in a landslide. You know, as time passes, people remember the good things. And I have a lot of respect for Tony Dungy. I like Tony Dungy as well. But the Bucks did win the Super Bowl immediately upon hiring John Gruden. And again, I'm not going to have the debate today on the show about, oh, well, he won with Dungy's players or that. I don't care about that. The point is, you can't really question results, right? I mean, it's a results-oriented league. And the Buccaneers made the move from Dungy, got Gruden, and won the Super Bowl immediately because their offense finally became a force. And it actually, I mean, you know, the defense, as we know, is one of the best ever that won the Super Bowl that year. But it wasn't like the Titans winning in 2000 or whatever it was, where it was all defense. The Bucs' offense was pretty damn good that year, too, or good enough. Brad Johnson, Keenan McCardell, Joe Jarovicius. Of course, they had Allstott, Keyshawn. I mean, that was a good offense. That was an offense that they could lean on and rely on when they needed to score points. And not a ton of points, but enough. And so, you know, that's why Tony Dungy didn't make it here. And it's a little bit awkward when someone fires you and you come back, even long, long ago. And Dungy even referenced it, saying, you know, I was fired here, but I also was hired here. And this was the beginning of my career. And he did go on to win a Super Bowl of his own with Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. So, looking forward to him being honored. He deserves it 100%. And I'm glad to see him, just seeing him standing at one buck on the podium with the Buck logos behind him and all that stuff was really cool. And again, you know, you can talk about the Super Bowl itself, and obviously, even though Gruden won it, Dungy definitely deserves some of the credit for that. Never have argued against that. But more so than just the Super Bowl, the franchise was one way before Tony Dungy got here, and then after he got here, it was a different way. And it was the first time in my life it had ever been that way. And even to this day, the Bucs haven't won a playoff game or played in a playoff game in 10 years. They haven't won a playoff game in 16 years, okay? But even to this day, the Bucs aren't the franchise of the 80s and 90s anymore because they've been there before. And we know they can go back there again. And at least for me, who was born after 1979, although as I say all the time, and most of if you listen to this show, you know I was at the 1979 NFC Championship game in utero. My mom was like 4 months pregnant. But, you know, coming after 1979, I didn't know anything but just hardcore losing. And Tony Dungy changed all that. And as a Bucks fan, I'll always feel grateful and indebted to him for that, even though he's not the coach that ultimately won the Super Bowl here. So that'll be something they'd honor him next month at Raymond James Stadium. It'll be a pretty cool deal. And in the meantime, we've got the Bucks and the Titans on Saturday night with the game Thursday last week. Long week this week. We got like, you know, 9-10 days between games here. So it'll be nice to have a game on Saturday night as the preseason rolls on. I want to thank the Joes for having me on their website and allowing me to post my podcast in front of all of you. Exposure I could never get without the Joes, and I appreciate it. And I want to thank all of you for listening. Have a fun week. Let's enjoy the ball game on Saturday night. Don't get on the whole I hate the preseason thing, all right? Just enjoy it for what it is. You know, even last week during the Dolphins game, a million articles popped up on Twitter the next day about the preseason needs this and that. And, you know, they write those every year, and I'm all for fixing the preseason. I even gave you my plan for what the preseason should look like last week. But I'm also not going to complain and look a gift horse in the mouth or whatever the hell the term is. There's football this weekend. If we cut back on the preseason, there may not be football this weekend. So, as I always say, I'll take football over no football, even if it is preseason football. Enjoy it. Have fun. I'll be back next week. In the meantime, email address, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com, Twitter at BobbyGameDay. If you want a fridge schedule, email me. Just email BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. I'm going to send them out today. And you can have a Bucks one. If you want a Gator one, too, I got that one. But definitely the Bucks one. It's pretty. It's going to be gorgeous on the side of your refrigerator or on the front of your refrigerator or anywhere else you want to put it, in your office, whatever. All it takes is a quick printout. I'll send you the Microsoft Word file. Very basic stuff. And if you want to make adjustments to it, if you like a different font or something, you can play with it and do whatever you want. But I gave you everything you're going to need right there. So for all of you, thanks again. I am Bobby Fenton. That is the Free Stretch, week two of the preseason. Have a great weekend, and wherever you are, good afternoon. Good morning, good evening, good night. Go Bucks!